Well, let me ask you this. These are California, you know, both California bands. Would you call Guns N' Roses a hard rock band?
Fucking bet I would. Because I hate those sons of bitches. Yes.
Well,
you should ask this question of someone who doesn't regard it as an insult. That would be more helpful.
Welcome to Tune Change,
a show where two music jerks try to give albums a chance.
Yeah, let's get into it. This is Tune Change, where the tunes don't change, but people do. We are talking about Faith No More's Angel Dust, and Faith No More is what you call a funk metal band, or at least that is how they are generally classified. And yeah, Matt, to your slightly pre-roll point, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like a compact disc, not a CD, a compact disc. It's like, have you seen these new discs? They're so compact.
This sounds best out of a console-sized single CD player. You know,
indeed, a big. It's big. It's heavy. It's actually probably black at this point.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the big, let's just production junction thing already. Okay. This sounds like a CD because it's very tinny, the drums are very loud, and they don't have a lot of body. So it's, I think a lot of that sound is a combination of drum volume without drum body, at least on the kind of speakers you're listening to this on in 1992.
Yeah, they're loud and they're thin, and the bass is really mid-rangey and also very forward in the mix.
And the guitars are kind of like weak and compressed and usually not at all heavy.
You know what I think this is? I think that it may be another classic example of sounds different in the room, perhaps when they're recording, and then the output of the, you know, the final product
feels like
it has lost something in the...
I think that's probably it, and that's probably some of it, and I think it's also that, like, this is what people thought sounded good in 1991, was, like,
that's true.
Really loud, tinny mixes to listen to on their shitty, tinny speakers. That's what this sounds like to me. It's not that different from, like, the way that Fishbone single sounds, you know?
Well, and I was talking about, I can't remember if this was before we started, but this pocket universe of bands that are defined, like the thing that keeps them together is this sound. And granted, Faith No More, you know, you read through the literature, and by the literature, I mean the Wikipedia, you know, they're formed in 79 and, you know, had a big hit in 88. You know, that was when either 88 or 89, that was when Epic came out. That was the biggest one that I was even aware of, but yes, as we say, it's this tinny compressed sound that is shared by bands like INXS. I think of this, the first Stone Temple Pilots record sounds like this.
It's kind of characterized by a snare drum that's just a big, like, square wave clipping for about a quarter of a second. It's just a very harsh sounding snare drum usually. Yeah. I think probably the record that killed this sound by adding body to all the instruments and being well produced is Rage Against the Machine's first record. But it's still a little bright for my tastes, and that's the tail end of this trend.
You're exactly right, and that's the perfect estuary. Yes, because there's a song on this record that sounds, you know, like it could have been on that Rage self-titled. And I think for me,
they wouldn't have been able to say all the sounds were made with guitar, drums, bass, and vocals.
of all of the bands that we've mentioned, the Faith that are in this, you know, straddling the 80s, 90s era, are these the most, is this the more, is this the most keyboard heavy? Keys are all over this record.
There are a lot of keys. Yeah, I mean, probably. I mean, they, we should have had a segment called Mike Patton Feuds. but one of his feud pals, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they wouldn't have had any keyboards for sure. You wouldn't Absolutely. Catch them anywhere close to keyboard, unless they got somebody from Parliament Funkadelic, because they would have been so excited that someone from Parliament Funkadelic talked to them. Did they do stuff? They must have done stuff with George Clinton, right? When in the George Clinton, like, whoring himself around early 90s period?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It seems plausible.
Yeah, it seems pretty likely.
I tell you what, they were recorded around the same time. I think Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out in 91, and this is June of 92, recorded in 91. I think that record sounds a lot better than this, but I still think this is a, and we're coming off of a bad record, and we've gotten at least a pretty good record.
Yeah, I think here. The material overwhelms the production for the most part, and I think the songs that are the best seem to be a little less have fewer of the pro, like when I think of Everything's Ruined, I think that's pretty effectively produced, but I think that's also kind of the arrangement is doing that work. So yes. I think kind of the well-arranged songs are better produced because they tend to lean away from the band's weaknesses and the production's weaknesses.
Yeah.
So the guitars, so I was expecting a little more metal in my funk metal. But this record is kind of considered a departure. So I was expecting to kind of not expect funk metal to an extent, but I was still a little disappointed for the most part in the guitar tone. It's kind of like, it's got a little bit of kind of like, I don't know. It sounds almost like lit. It's not heavy. And when it's effective, it can be doomy, but it can't chug. Yes. And that's the problem. You need to chug. I need you to chug, or I'm not super into your metal guitars.
Well, and you know, it's not even that there's no chugging. It just that the chugging, it's when performed, doesn't chug. Everything is,
they don't emphasize it for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, all the metal bands I like are built around the chuggy part. So when people don't emphasize it, it's like, well, why bother?
What are we doing here, boys?
It's also way down in the mix.
Well, and I was going to say, you can't, the chug's getting, cymbals eat guitars, as it were.
So this record is a departure. But I knew it from the pre-departure. We should talk about what we knew and when we knew it.
Yes.
What did the president know? And when did he know it?
Really, my only, you know, long-term knowledge of Faith No More was Epic. We were talking about the video. I don't remember the video, but I do remember seeing them, that there was an SNL performance in which they played Epic, and you know, it would come up on the radio, and I'd say, yeah, I'll stop the scan for Epic every once in a while. But really, that was the only thing that I had. I knew more Mike Patton. You know, he's all over all over the place, all over all different kinds of records and feuds as it sounds out. But,
yeah, so I, inherited a copy of The Real Thing from my brother on cassette tape. I never listened to it, to my knowledge. I knew Epic from, the TV, because VH1 treated every like noteworthy music video like a piece of history. And it would, I mean, honestly, it was like they were talking about Valley Forge. They're like, they broke new ground. They all broke new ground. Because it's got the fish flopping around and the piano outro. And yeah, so VH1 was kind of rhapsodic about it. So that's what I knew it from. And I liked it fine, but I wasn't drawn to it because of, you know, our previous discussion about funk metal. We're probably not going to talk too much about this guy leaving the band, but the guy left the band after this record because of their change in direction. Can you imagine leaving a band because it wasn't funk metal enough?
Well, and a fairly successful band, you know, like, you know, they're making records.
Yeah, that had fucked like, around for like 9 years before finding success. Yeah, but he was like, man, I miss the funk metal, and that's so far from my headspace. Yeah, I can't relate to it.
You know, I guess the grass is greener, but I don't know where you're stepping, because this seems like the best that,
well, he probably saw that like most of the commercial venture was already in place. Like, you know, he has a writing credit on Epic and this record,
because
they generally all have writing credits on everything except the pretty cool covers, if we're being honest.
The covers were cool.
Yeah, so he's kind of set from a fairly so I feel like the success was kind of, you know, banked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah, anything more was just going to be a marginal marginal gain. But
I just can't get down with funk. But like Rage Against the Machine is my least favorite record of theirs. The less funky they got, the more I liked it. So it's but not everything on this record that's funky is my least favorite. In fact, some of my favorite stuff on this record has like funk elements, but they're only elements. You were more of a Red Hot Chili Peppers person than me. So,
well, yeah. Well, and,
because it's impossible to be less of a Red Hot Chili Peppers person.
Right. Definitionally. well, I brought it up before. I love Blood Sugar Sex Magik. I think it's a great record. You know, I think it's a great record. Their other output is also pretty good. Certainly, you know, eventually became Diminishing Returns, as so many things do.
It pretty immediately became Diminishing Returns. Isn't their next record One Hot Minute?
That's, well, that
the
was
Dave Navarro.
That was the Dave
one.
Navarro one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, this is like the thing when people are like, well, I mean, when you throw out his three worst games, he's a pretty good pitcher. It's like, well, yeah, everybody is. Let's just talk about the kind of makeup of the band while we're kind of here.
Yeah.
They are a fucking great band. They are really, really effective just as players. I feel like this record is kind of them jacking themselves off about how versatile they are to some extent. because it's kind of eclecticism for eclecticism's sake. Well, it absolutely is that.
Yeah,
they structure the record so that the biggest departure from their usual sound that they wrote is up top.
Yes, I think you hit the bullseye there with that, but they are definitely they sound like a band who has been playing together for a long time.
Yes,
and like
with a new fucking weirdo that they found.
they have mastered the form that they're you know inhabiting, and you can see them, you know, like trying, and when you get to that point, you that's where you feel like, you know, you're perhaps most drawn to want to try new things and be eclectic, you know.
Yeah,
perhaps for, you know, the sake of it.
Yeah, and I'll say this, you can tell they're a great band, but to me it's equally clear that they really need Mike Patton and that he completes all of this, and that without him it's probably not fair to call them like unremarkable, but they're not super remarkable. You know, they have some pretty interesting ideas sometimes, but my question is kind of how many of those are coming from him.
Yeah,
and he's almost always the, like, you know, it's like a cake without icing. Like, it can be pretty good, but if you just don't have the icing, it's not going to be an average cake that has icing, right?
Yes.
You need that part.
I mean, there's you know, lots and lots and lots of really good bands who've been playing together for a long time and have mastered their form, and, you know, but do you have a vision? I think,
yeah,
is what I feel like he brought.
And I feel like he must be responsible for the, like, samplers and stuff and probably a lot of the key stuff, because you can kind of tell he is trying to make up stuff to do. He wants to be involved, you know? He doesn't want to just, you know, he's not Vince Neil. He's not like, hey, you know, write it all and I'll sing about girls, girls, girls.
we got four more tracks. Gotta nuke something.
So, yeah, so there's a bunch of sampler on this, like Midlife Crisis samples Cecilia, and it samples a Beastie Boys song.
Yeah.
A Small Victory has that super fun drum machine that woo.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm willing to bet that of all of the tracks, that's the one that we'll have the most to say about.
But, yeah, because it's like easily the best. yeah, so the samplers are super fun, and this motherfucker can beatbox his lyrics, and he often does. He is almost, he's a great example of, like, if you're rhythmic and in the pocket and adding to the whole kind of picture, it doesn't really matter what you're saying or whether it rhymes or whether you're classically good at singing.
Oh, yeah.
And he's actually a damn good singer when he just, like, croons.
Yeah.
But he's got a pretty low register, which is weird for this type of music. And I really like it.
As a gentleman with a low register voice, it is difficult to find a vehicle for that. You know, like... There's Crash Test Dummies. There's this, you know, there's a few others, but, you know, if you're going to sing and, you know, rather than growl or scream, it can be weird. And I almost wonder if it's there's too much, you know, frequency overlap, you know, between distorted guitars, you know, you need a higher register voice to kind of soar over that.
Yeah, and that's why in metal, typically you only go way down or up.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're either, Corey Taylor, you know, growling low, or you're King Diamond.
Yeah. So the lyrics are pretty good. when you actually look at him. He's always got ideas. It doesn't matter if shit rhymes if there's a good rhythm, and yes, he's all about rhythm. This is so we just released the Thursday episode, which is the fucking total opposite. So it was a delight to listen to this after having to listen to that over and over again for editing. The lyrics are fun. They've kind of got a Primus thing going where a lot of the songs are either about a weird guy or as a weird guy.
Right.
A lot of as a weird guy. He's much more of an as a weird guy.
Yes. Yeah. Very, you know, orchestral is an adjective that's been used. I would say even more than that is theatrical. You know, we're there's characters, there's, you know, there's settings and plots and.
Yeah, I sweat a lot.
And it's effective. It enriches the song and is what it's one of my favorite parts of the record. It's without it, I would like two or three of these songs pretty good if it was just some random singer, I think. Mm-hmm. So, I made a chart you can't see because it's audio.
It's an audio medium.
But, essentially, I think you can kind of track this album by how much funk meddling are we doing versus how dynamic are we within the song? Because the best songs on this record have very high dynamic ranges within them. Either a like hard left turn into a totally different song, which is almost always even better than the song they were playing, or sometimes significantly better than the song they were playing. And then there's songs that are like pretty samey, and some of those can be effective, but they have sort of a ceiling that the really dynamic songs more easily surpass.
If I had to guess, I would be willing to bet that those were songs that were older, because they, if we're thinking of the same ones, they sound the same to me as, you know, closer to Epic than the more eclectic songs on this record.
Well, we're not playing Guess Who. We can just like talk about it. It's a small victory is easily the high point. And that does have kind of an Epic-y vibe. It's not as harsh. But it's kind of in that vein of like kind of soaring. You know what I mean?
Soaring is exactly right. They, you know, it's got a really interesting, really neat melody.
Fucking earworm melody that will get stuck in your head for a very long time.
It is a pattern. It's nice and expansive, but yeah, it is the one that has stayed with me the most out of everything on this. And we have it, you have it ranked here. Where am I seeing?
It's not a ranking, it's chart. All right.
Evaluated.
Yes. I like it. I don't like Genesis like it, but it's one of my favorite things we've needed to listen to for this thing.
This is exactly the kind of, you know, discovery we're hoping to make. It's the whole point of the show is, you know, hey, this is a great song off of this album that, you know, who other than diehard heads, who's listening to the second big I guess more successful Faith No More record. I don't know how
it's more beloved now because. There's a type of guy called a Mike Patton guy that we've talked about before. I get it now. I'm not one, but I understand it in a way that I didn't before I listened to this record, because he's very, very interesting pretty consistently. So I can understand getting really attached to some artist who's like just always taking left turns and doing something totally different.
Yeah.
Like one of the feuds he had is he was invited to join Velvet Revolver when they were forming. Yeah, and he declined and then gave an interview where he like openly laughed at them and told the interviewer, everyone understands why I said no except for them. And then he joined Dillinger Escape Plan.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so he joined Dillinger Escape Plan instead, which is, again, the most opposite of Velvet Revolver you could probably get.
I'm the best you'll ever have!
What a reach. You want to hang out with Slash?
Well, and it's funny that you mentioned that because, like another of these of this kind of, you know, turn of the decade production, you know, and a lot of California as well, I'm sure, bands, and I think of a lot of what we've talked through. These guys sound the best, but Guns N' Roses is another, you know, kind of contemporary of these guys and you know are more successful but certainly less interesting. I think
I fucking hate Guns N' Roses. I hate them. Like it's some of my least favorite music. I hate kind of shrieky vocals like that. I hate the like swaggery kind of rock aesthetic. I have heard all the songs so many times that that if I never hear any of them again, that'll be delightful. I can't imagine wanting to listen to the five singles or whatever from Appetite for Destruction. And people are I'm sure people who like got into it at the time. There are songs that I could probably hear a billion more times and not get tired of, and there's songs I kind of fell in love with when I was 15. So that can always happen. I get it. But, woo, for me. A Small Victory is great. I think it has great lyrics. I think the lyrics stuck with me almost as much as the melody did. I like the kind of punchy phrase that you can kind of think about and apply to different situations. It shouldn't bother me, but it does. That refrain, I just really dig when lyricists do that. He also does a thing on this record that I really like where there's not a rhyme within a chorus, but the choruses are slightly different and rhyme with one another.
Yes.
Which is a big time move that I've used. I've done that a bunch of times. It's a good trick.
It's great. It's great when it works. And I think we mentioned before, but it's worth saying again, the sampler really being used well here with the
I'll drop it in. Yeah, and the other song that I think is not quite at that level but is good in the same way is Everything's Ruined.
Yes.
Everything's Ruined. I like that one. It's great. Yeah. It's got the really interesting verse parts that are driven by bass and piano, and the bass has some bottom end to it for once, and it's very spare in a kind of epic way. But it's very different from epic because it's not like bash you over the head. Like,
well, it's
we're doing a Run DMC song. So Everything's Ruined is great. and has a lot of dynamic range to it, and has the thing I was just talking about of like one phrase repeated over and over again as the refrain, which I'm a big fan of.
And it's interesting that we've latched on to the slower songs of the record. Like, you know, we know that you can that you're high energy, and that, you know, even if it doesn't feel like a chug, you're still chugging and playing drum fills. But yeah, it's wild that the two that bubble to the top are kind of the more of a, I don't know about a ballad, but a slower tempo.
Yeah, and the other song I would put up there as a, like, I'll definitely come back to it, is Malpractice. If it didn't have the 45-second interlude where it turns into an Animal Collective song, it would not be on the list. But it does have that thing.
Yes.
And it's unbelievable. And I'm certain I've heard it before. I don't know where, but I am certain I have heard it somewhere before.
Somebody else has grabbed it and yeah, it recognized its
I want to just figure out how to loop it and make it 3 minutes long and just make my own song that I can have. And you guys can do whatever you want. But it's fucking great. So I think those three for me are things I will absolutely come back to. And then I think there are others where it's almost entirely based on the hook to me, so Land of Sunshine is super fun.
A strong opener, very, very opening track energy.
Yeah, and he does a thing where he doubles his voice and kind of in an interesting way. He knows how to produce his voice, and he knows how to use it so that it's recorded well. And it's just really effective. It's all built around the hook. It's got a bunch of stuff that without the vocal hook, I would be like, meh. But it's pretty good.
Well, and I think that goes to what you're saying about them needing Mike Patton, because you can play funk metal, but the only way that funk metal works is if there's some flavoring and some seasoning to it that makes it catch, you know,
right.
makes it right distinguish from
from just
funk metal. Like that,
yeah,
I suppose.
Rage Against the Machine had to have two. They had to have, like, they were the only band with an actual rapper, and they had to have a guitarist who made beepy boops.
Yes.
Like, if they had only one of those things, I don't think we're talking about them.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other things that I would put in the category of, like, this is pretty much what I thought I was getting. Land of Sunshine is one of them.
Yes.
Midlife Crisis is one of them, which I think is just kind of a weaker Land of Sunshine. Can I stop giving up to something? There's a security like buckets
jingling. Midlife Crisis. Yeah.
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. And I would put Caffeine in the same bucket of, like, I didn't hate it, I didn't love it. Honestly, sometimes I would kind of miss the transition from Land of Sunshine and just find myself in Caffeine.
The first three are definitely the most, you know, the kind of, they're giving up front a a dose and a nice hearty spoonful of that funk metal that you love and expect.
Yeah. But then we go into another track that I really, really came to like, which is RV. It's the only original in a category that I'm going to call, we're not like most bands. It's RV and the other two are covers. So yes. RV, the lyrics make it for me and the vocal melody makes it for me. Otherwise, this is like a novelty toss off. That's like, can you get a load of us doing this? You know?
You know, I think we've posited on this air before that, you know, everybody wants to be Tom Waits a little bit.
Not everybody, but Mike Patton sure wants to be Tom Waits a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I would say Mike Patton wants to be Tom Waits more than just a little bit. But this is a lot of fun. I am glad that this is here, and it's definitely a nice kind of breeze from across the way after that you know the pounding funk of the first three.
Yeah, and it's what people were talking about with, like, it's they didn't give the fans what they expected, like a bunch of like, I didn't expect a sad song about dying in an RV, but I got one. This album is heavily front loaded, I feel like, with a couple of exceptions, like A Small Victory and Everything's Ruined are both. Well, Everything's Ruined is the tail end of the front half,
smack in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really the front half and A Small Victory. The covers at the end are, they almost read like bonus tracks.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They're both really good. But they read like bonus tracks, and those are the theme from Midnight Cowboy and a cover of Easy by the Commodores, which you might know as Easy Like Sunday Morning.
Right. I've not seen Midnight Cowboy, and I wasn't familiar with this piece. Oh shit, it's John Barry of all folks. But no, I really liked it a lot.
I don't know who that is.
I'm assuming it's the John Barry of the James Bond theme fame.
Ew.
I will, I'll confirm that, but.
Oh, please do.
Yes, the James Bond themed, John Barry Pendergrast, OBE. So yes, these are a really nice helping of We're Not Like Other Bands offerings from the fellas.
Yeah. Now let's talk about a batch of songs that I'm going to call We're a Little Like Other Bands. and there's so Smaller and Smaller.
Yeah.
Kindergarten and Jizz Lobber. So see, they're a lot of fun. They got a song called Jizz Lobber. Like, what are you gonna do? Smaller and Smaller, I think, is pretty easily my favorite of these, but I don't mind the other two. They're a little less funky than the mm-hmm. first three tracks, and they're a little more like, they're just kind of an alt metal. They're trying to just be they're trying. This is like they're on their way to Helmet. You know what I mean? They're going to wind up in Helmet. It's a ways out, but that's where they're headed from their previous sound. Well, they kind of turned the mid range on the bass down and like sensible people.
Oh, up top we had the funk metal, and now we're getting the metal funk. and yeah, I think Smaller and Smaller is the strongest of these. These kind of ran together me for a little bit.
I mean, Smaller and Smaller is the most memorable one. So I think of it, like I can hum it to you. I can't with the other two, really.
That's true.
I could get there with Kindergarten, I think, but Jizz Lobber, I've got no shot. I got no shot.
Well, it's just it's long and doomy, and
which I didn't ever mind it. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't ever skip it. I might have skipped Kindergarten a couple of times. it's not bad. But then we've got a couple of songs that where we should have just called it. This is more compact disc of like we can fit whatever the fuck. So, you know, whatever. So I regret to inform you that the song Crack Hitler is not very good. I wanted it to be good. I gave it a lot of chances. It would be delightful to be able to say Faith No More's got a song called Crack Hitler, and you're not going to believe this, but it's fucking great. it isn't fucking great. It's just not very good. It's kind of a toss off. It's very funky.
Well, this is all funk and no metal. And
yes,
you need some metal. You know, that's how it works. You need the funk and the metal. They're in varying proportions, but when one is absent, the whole experiment fails.
Yeah, and then we've got a little bit of We're Not Like Most Bands. We got a song about giving blowjobs, be aggressive. And my objection to this is I knew exactly how the chorus was going to go before I listened to it.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean the chant. I mean, like, I could kind of picture it in my... I kind of hear it in my head. And then I got exactly what I was expecting. And the thing I like about this band is that I don't get exactly what I'm expecting. So it was disappointing. Yeah,
you don't want that. So you don't want to be able to solve it ahead of time. No, I had that same reaction. You know, I saw it coming up in the
playlist. It's like a CBS procedural.
Is it? are they gonna do the thing? And then they did the thing, and I was like, okay, well, they did the thing, and
whatever. So that's it. I think we got those batches of songs. We got the great songs that have extreme shifts or are just really good. We got the hey, we're not like most bands, and they demonstrate that they are extremely competent and often great.
Yes.
Then we've got some songs that are they're just going to turn into a metal band, and this is their warning. We've got the stuff we start with, which is more the funk that they're coming from, and then we've got a couple of things that could have been left on the cutting room floor, and if we were still making tapes,
yes,
and if we were still making vinyl
this
records,
is a 10 song record, then
we also would have
not seeing these.
We also would have mixed and mastered this thing differently, and that would have been a good idea. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's like CDs are new. Hey, we can use the same mix, right?
That, you know, that's an interesting theory, and one that I think is probably, you know, if it didn't happen here, surely it happened in some, you know, permutation elsewhere.
Yeah. Because not everybody's got the money to mix it five different times. Because not everybody can mix their own shit in those days. This is 1989. It was like weird to not
you gotta call
shit
up
in
a guy.
Studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think it's time to get in. It's not really a game. But it's time to get into the segment. I'm going to call it The Tunes Changed. It's bands who, like Faith No More, change their sound significantly. And I think we got to focus on bands who change their sound significantly after becoming famous. Because the other way is, like, that's probably happened more times. And there's countless, like, punk and new wave bands who were like, maybe we should not piss off the Squares. So I have a couple of those as honorable mentions, but I think we should just shoot the shit about some bands that changed their sound pretty significantly after becoming famous and the implications of that, whether good or ill. So Matt, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I have a handful of these, and I'm sure I'm going to think about, come up with more as we're talking, but one that immediately came to mind that might be in that category that you're talking about is Sugar Ray, who was also a rap rock funk
on my list
funk band, and then they decided, hey, Mark McGrath is pretty conventionally handsome, let's make some pop music, and they sure did.
What if the tips were frosted? Sugar Ray is absolutely on my list, but I do have them in the pre-fame switch, because the record that Fly is on has a bunch of rap rock on it, but it has Fly on it. So yes. The thing everybody knew was their new sound, and that's what they were from that point. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that was the switch. It wasn't after the switch.
Yes, I had someone give me a tape in the seventh grade, so this would have been 1998, so it would have been right there with a rap rock Sugar Ray song, and I remember getting this tape and being confused. wait, what?
I've listened to it. It's horrible. You're probably not surprised I've listened to it. The other pre-fame one I thought of to just get out of the way is Pantera. They were a hair metal band before being a groove metal band. It was a Diamond Daryl. May he rest in peace. First up on my list is, I think you can count Beastie Boys.
Oh, absolutely you can count Beastie Boys.
Yeah, because they started out as like kind of some meatheads.
A novelty act. Yeah.
And turned into like the conscience of hip hop by the time they retired.
It's really wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really wild how good they are, how, really just unassailable that, their output and their their presence, it's wild that...
So if someone had told you in, like, 1986, like,
right.
Hey, the Beastie Boys are gonna... they're gonna have not only indisputably great albums, but the best politics.
This may come as no shock to you, but... And I've felt this for a while, but it seems like, the more you hear about Rick Rubin, the more it's like, oh no, he was actually bad.
Yeah, a little
bad
bit.
Rick Rubin.
Yeah, he is. Well, he's the, like, he's basically this is making me intro. He's basically David Lynch. He's just like doing his only thing is he just wants to make whatever records he wants to make, and like whoever's around him, he just channels what he wants to do through them. Is what it feels like. And he like if he can't channel what he wants to do through them, he just gets bored and leaves. The Beastie Boys went from the like meathead frat guys to marrying Bikini Kill. So whatever. Okay, Matt, what's next on your list?
This is kind of a weird thing, but I think fits the mold of after they got famous. Wilco has gone through a pretty big, or maybe not strict, bifurcation. There's a little bit of returning to roots from time to time, but they've certainly gone through cycles of starting as an alt country band and then kind of becoming an orc pop band and then becoming, you know, more of like, not fusion necessarily, but more contemporary or dad rocky, I suppose, but just, and one of the ways that I've thought about this prompt is through a three album cycle and like going from being there to Summer Teeth to Yankee, as kind of a,
don't shorten the name like your friends. Don't, Matt. We have to be impartial, Matt.
To Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Thank you.
You know, there's a little bit of twang left, but it's a, and in a lot of ways, in that case, it's very much a different band entirely. In that, you know, Jeff Tweedy, much like also someone who just wants to make the record that he wants to make, and you know, finds the people around him to make the record. You know,
or he doesn't, and he asks them to go away, please. Yeah, they weren't on my list, but I think you can count it. They kind of shifted as they became popular, but they came to prominence. I mean, they were prominent from the beginning because of Uncle Tupelo, and there was a bunch of people coming from there, and that was a huge shift.
I thought about making mention of that up top. Is that the prominence was kind of established in a previous band.
So my next one is indisputable, and that's Genesis.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So obviously a big change for the worse. just got, I think, steadily worse continuously from The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. And like, it was pretty gradual there at first.
Yes.
And then it got heavy duty around the time this record came out. That's another, like, hey, have you heard of compact discs? Is that I Can't Dance?
I was about to say, when did I Can't Dance come out? Because
yeah, like 1990 on the nose, I think. Yeah. Do you have another one?
I do. Radiohead, you know,
yes,
is kind of a, you know,
it's our generation's,
bog simple.
It's our generation's Dylan going electric. They went electronic.
Oh, that's a really interesting way of putting that. But yeah, you're totally right. You know, and again,
I just thought it sounded clever, and I wanted to make you react to it. I don't even know if I believe it. I just thought of it now.
Well, and thinking again of kind of the three album cycle, and you know, this. They got famous off of Creep, and yes, you know, Pablo Honey, I confession time, I don't know that I've sat down and done a back to front on Pablo Honey or front to back.
Never listened to it.
See?
We could do it as an episode. Hey, we could idea, let's just make it live. We should do a record that one of us has heard but not in a long time, and the other one is hearing for the first time. That should be,
yeah,
our next couple of records, and we can do Pablo Honey for one of them.
Absolutely. No,
that's a good idea I had. So I think Radiohead is, I think it's a little overstated actually how much they changed, because they kept coming back to elements of their sound and retaining and transforming parts of their sound.
Oh, for sure.
Once they were the like Kid A band, from that point, they were just kind of recombining all the stuff, right? And they aged.
Yes.
And so it changed, but they're kind of recombining all the same shit. Like, are we being like Smithy, or are we being like Aphex Twin, or are we being like us, or are we being like, you know... I think another one in that vein where it's like, I think it's a little overstated how much they changed, but they certainly did change, is Deftones.
Ooh, that's an excellent, excellent one that I had not considered.
I think it's very similar to Radiohead, where they, yes, like, they added shit up until they got to White Pony, and from there, they're recombining all the stuff. Although they added
had to perfect
a little
the
bit
recipe.
More, yeah, they added a little bit more, hardcore metal, mm-hmm, to their stuff. But one funny thing about Deftones is they kept, like, I think all their albums are tuned down another half step for like 8 albums in a row. They just kept going down.
Little bit lower.
So now they play like 8 string baritones for the most part, but have to carry like a billion guitars because they so I think Deftones and Radiohead are kind of similar in that way of they evolve to a point, but then it feels like they kind of stayed the same for a long time, and I hope they keep doing what they're doing forever. You know what? I think another one that's a little overstated and might even fit this pattern is Dylan.
If you're going to be a success, you know, if you're going to be successful over multiple decades, you know, it's almost inevitable that you're going to try different things make whole moves or eras, to coin a phrase. And with that, I will add, I am less familiar with the totality of her output, but I would say Taylor Swift has done this, gaining success as a conventional country musician, and then, doing pop and doing what she does.
I had not thought of that, but yeah, that would be very embarrassing to not mention as the most famous person on the earth is this. You know what I think an underrated example is the Clash. The Clash, yeah, sounds so different from Sandinista. There's almost none of the Clash in Sandinista. And it was not super gradual. They had like one pure punk record, and then they made like the Give 'Em Enough Rope kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right after that, which is great. And then they made London Calling, which is always classified as a punk record, but I don't think really is. It's just it's fabulous, but it's certainly not the Clash.
Can you call a double a double album a punk record? You know,
if you sell it for cheap enough, you can. God damn it.
They're two bands, so it doesn't really count, but there's a lot of overlap. You put on a Warsaw record, what became Joy Division, and then you go and listen to New Order, and those are very divergent.
Doesn't count. That's the first time you've seemed pissed off when I
no I knew it was on the bubble.
I mean if that counts, then I'm gonna say At the Drive-In turning into two different bands that don't sound alike. A band that changed subtly over time, but did, if you take, you know, I don't know how we should count this, because it's like on one level it feels like there's some of this that is just, you're together long enough, it's legitimately just aging, right?
Yes.
It's like taking a picture of someone when they're 2 and then one when they're 20 and be like, oh my God! they grew overnight. They must have. It's like, uh-huh. No, it happened over the course of a long, long time. ZZ Top. As you might know them. they eventually added synthesizers. But I think more in the spirit of The Exercise is a band we've talked about before and has already come up on this episode is Lit. Genre hopping motherfuckers just trying to find another hit. They want one so bad. Can we bro country? Are we still young enough for that?
Well, and that's a genre I feel like is there's more. You can be older in bro country and still, you know, have a presumably have success. I'm sure fits
the list. Darius Rucker.
There you go.
I'm way more willing to count that than at the drive-in or whatever you suggested.
Much like both the Deftones and Radiohead, the Smashing Pumpkins went electronic for a little while. Now they have returned to, you know, kind of what to the stuff that people liked more.
They haven't all returned. many of them are not in the band. I think all of them at this point, except Billy. Wait, is James Iha back?
I think both James Iha and Jimmy Chamberlain have been back at different points. I do not have the membership Gantt chart in front of me,
pull that shit up.
According to the literature, and by the literature I mean Wikipedia, the current members are Billy Corgan, James Iha, and Jimmy Chamberlain. With Iha and Chamberlain playing with them at various points. James Iha didn't come back until 2018. And has been with them since.
It's a less interesting Gantt chart than I would have figured. I think you got to filter this so that the people with the shortest tenures are at the bottom.
That would be helpful. I agree.
Because we got Tommy Lee and Brad Wilk on the drums for like 45 minutes in 2015.
I was not aware of this. My God.
They were touring musicians.
Mm.
Tommy Lee. Being associated with Tommy Lee in 2014, huh?
Well, you know, Billy Corgan being the upstanding bastion of goodwill and good nature that he is.
Yeah, it's weird that he has so many options. But I mean, you have a job that you can give people, so mm-hmm. That's usually gonna work.
Someone taps me on the shoulder every 5 minutes. Nobody speaks English anymore. Are they gonna tell me if I was getting stupider?
So no, I don't think I have much else to say that hasn't been said, but I would welcome a remix or a remaster or something that gets this untinny. But I feel like bands like this usually are like, that was the time it was, the time was the time it was, how they avoid doing anything.
Certainly am intrigued enough to see about a foray into the previous and subsequent records, just to get a taste of where they went and where they came from. I liked it. I
Yeah, I'm glad to have heard it.
Have we decided next week? Or do we want to jump right or next week? Have we decided next time? Do we want to jump right into Pablo Honey?
No, we already decided it was going to be Devo.
Yes. Yeah, we picked out two, and we decided on this one.
Okay, I'll think on it. We know the next two. That's plenty. Yeah. We'll do Pablo Honey, and because I always heard it is the Radiohead album that I avoided because it's like, you know, people said it's worse than all the ones I like.
Like, so, why would I eat regular cornflakes when I've got Frosted Flakes right here?
Yeah, exactly. Why would I eat vegetables when I have everything but vegetables?
Well,
it's because you'll die.
Well, join us next time, where we will eat our vegetables. Perhaps no, I think this is gonna go down like a fine fish and chips wrapped in a newspaper. Or maybe some beans, but no, that's
beans,
that's.
Let's split the difference. It's beans wrapped in newspaper.
but until then, listener, wherever you find yourself, we thank you for listening to the show. And until then, for Brett, I am Matt, and don't forget to listen to music.
Speak for me.